Welcome to the Inner Fight Endurance Podcast. That was a slip of the tongue. I nearly didn't say podcast there. I don't know what I was going to say. Brought to you by Hoka. Another guest show for you today. I'm actually recording the entire show myself, and I'm recording the intro myself because, well, actually poor planning. I had to go back and sort some things out at the flat, and so did Tom, and we realised we had to record the intro, but we didn't arrange when. So he went home, I went home, and now I'm recording it. Anyway, what is happening? I want to tell you, or invite you perhaps even better, to our Chamonix camp. We are heading to Chamonix in summer of 2024. Who is it for? Well, anyone within the Inner Fight Endurance community. Friends, family, athletes. We can accommodate anyone. And if there's someone you'd like to bring, or if you would like to come to Chamonix, perhaps we've never met in person. Perhaps somebody you want to bring, we've never met in person. Let us know. And all of the runs, all of the hikes that we do on that week in Chamonix can be tailored to suit all needs. Ladies Run Club will be there with a big presence. Inner Fight Endurance Ireland will be coming over and bringing some athletes. I'm pretty sure, well, we have one, potentially one person coming from New Zealand. But if you want to come to Inner Fight Endurance Chamonix Camp between the 8th and the 14th of July, send me an email, rj@innerfight.com. I'll send you through an information booklet. And that's it. You book the flights, you book the accommodation, and we'll see you there. Do you know any beginner runners, anyone that you speak to in the office that says, I cannot believe that you get up and you run 15K, 20K, you do a session on a Tuesday morning, you run on a Friday, I'm in bed, I'd like to be more like you. You are their inspiration, and maybe what they need is the Start to Run series. There are three options available. Start to Run for the complete beginner runner that wants to hit maybe a 5 or perhaps even a 10K. Then we have Start to Run Half Marathons, which the idea is to take people to their first half marathon, or if they already have run a half marathon but want to potentially PB it. And finally, Start to Run Marathons, which is somebody who is aiming for potentially their first marathon. And if not their first, maybe their second or third, and they want to get a little bit quicker. Within that is included our community run session. So our Tuesday run, our Friday run, and any community events in between. Again, if anyone wants to join that, or you know anyone that that would be suited for, send me a message, rj@innerfight.com. I'll have a chat with them and we can get them running and get them as part of the community. This week, our guest, we've had her on before, is Sophie Holmes. Sophie Grace Holmes, actually, to call her by her full name. She was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis, which is a genetic condition that affects the lungs, the pancreas, digestion, and a whole host of other things. She was diagnosed at 4 months old and was told she would not live into her teens. And she was told that throughout her younger life and even into her early teenage years. She made it her mission to show what is possible with a healthy, fit mind and body when the odds are against her. Her passion lies in helping men, women grow their fitness journey and their mindset, and providing inspiration and motivation to become fitter, stronger, and more confident with her coaching and meal plans. And she is a huge fan of adventure and setting herself up with some crazy challenges, which have included her own Ultra Woman, I guess. So she did a ultra distance swim, an ultra distance cycle, and I want to say a 50K run to finish it all off, all organized by herself. And her latest challenge is to take on 36 consecutive marathons in 36 consecutive days. She has just started, so this goes out on Wednesday. She started on Sunday, just gone, with the London Marathon, and she'll be running marathons every single day, pretty much confined to the southwest of England, until she finishes with Edinburgh Marathon 36 days later. We talk a little bit about that, but we talk a lot about her background, her mindset, and how it feels to be told that you shouldn't be alive, but yet you're achieving some incredible things, and you have an army of followers through social media that are in similar situations to you that use what you put out there as inspiration and motivation to keep themselves healthy and ultimately keep themselves living longer. So we talk a little bit about that. Here is my conversation with Sophie Grace Holmes.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. I can't believe how long it's been.
Yeah, we just said January 2021 was the last time you were on. But, and you rightly said, a lot's changed. You're on show 63 and we called it Achieving Extraordinary. Now, I'm going to read the bio that I wrote for you. It might be actually, I might have taken your bio from your website. You can tell me how much of it has changed or not. You are a fitness coach, public speaker, influencer, ultra endurance athlete, nutrition coach, and businesswoman. While your passion lies in adventure, specifically physical adventure, you provide inspiration and motivation to others via personal training and public speaking to become fitter, stronger, and more confident by sharing your journey and encouraging others to shift their mindset to seek theirs. How much of that is still true, or how much of that has changed?
To be fair, a lot of it is still true, but I think I now lean a bit further into the discomfort and the joys of that and what that brings. But I think you will know that's a tendency that we all love to do once we start getting into these crazy races or crazy challenges.
Definitely. Okay, so we have, since show 63, we have had a lot of new listeners and a lot of new growth. So tell us who you are, what's your background, what do you do? Who is Sophie Grace Holmes?
All right, well, I'll take you back to the beginning because I think that's probably the best place to start. So
yes.
I was born with cystic fibrosis, which is a life-threatening lung disease where mucus builds up in the body, predominantly the lungs, which causes infections, which can cause lung damage, which can shorten life. And I wasn't diagnosed till I was 4 months old. And so I think for my parents, I think they quoted, it was like bringing up a baby to die because they got told I wouldn't make 16 years old, which I'm not a parent. So I can't imagine what that must feel like, having your child who was premature anyway by 10 weeks and then being told all this news.
How did they get to the, so you were born 10 weeks early. Were there any signs then that things were wrong? How did they decide to then test you at 4 months old? Because I know things have come a long way since then, and now it's almost like you get tested almost pre-birth right now, don't you, to see if anyone has cystic fibrosis.
Yeah, and I think, as you've said, like when I was born, like it wasn't even an automatic birth test. So basically, to get down to the detail, I had a very bad stomach a lot of the time. I was crying a lot of the time and I kept stop breathing, and essentially, I guess for them, they were worried that there was something wrong. They weren't sure what. Doctors just said it was because I was premature, but both my sisters actually both 8 to 10 weeks premature as well. So, you know, this was brand new symptoms. And actually there was a nurse that was on duty the night that they thought that I wouldn't make it, who touched my skin. With people with cystic fibrosis, their skin is naturally salty. Because the salt can't be reabsorbed. And she touched my skin and she was like, she's salty, let's get her a test. Went for time behind the consultant's back, and obviously it came back saying I had CF. So yeah, I guess saved my life that night.
And so that's kind of shaped, well, once you have a cystic fibrosis, I'm going to say diagnosis, but once it's confirmed that you have cystic fibrosis, it's, I guess the, like you said, you can have mucus build up. So I guess the easiest way to describe it is the mucus that's normally very fluid and helps clear the, well, it makes your mucus sticky instead of slippy. And so it builds up in the lungs, pancreas, intestines, which can obviously cause lots of issues. And I know my cousin had an operation when he was younger. He has cystic fibrosis as well. And he had to have part of his lower intestine removed because there was a blockage. And that's, I think, it's quite common with people who I guess are mid-30s, early 30s before the invention of these new drugs that come out, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. And I've got, even since 2021, since we last spoke, like the amount that has changed for medication for people with CF is phenomenal. Like, I've gone from taking, you know, 80 tablets and inhalers a day to just taking 3 or 4.
Wow.
You know, it's phenomenal in terms of, you know, that itself, the time it's given me back, but also the benefit it has given my body, my lungs, my digestive system, like the way I can perform when I train. It's completely, I guess, transformed that. I mean, it can come with a few unwanted side effects, but, you know, predominantly this medication could help people see cystic fibrosis as something that isn't life-limiting anymore.
Let's go into that, because I remember we had you on the show in Jan 2021, but we ran together. I want to say it was maybe 2022. It was after we did the podcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
You weren't on, what's the new drug's called?
Kaftrio.
And I've written down these things like, how the hell do you pronounce this? And I guess a common problem with people with cystic fibrosis used to be malnutrition, because you can't absorb the nutrients from the food. And so you're eating a huge volume of food, but you're not getting the benefits of that food. So I remember having a conversation with you. I think you said you were consuming maybe the upwards of 3,500 calories a day, and you lifted weights. So you had quite a lot of muscle, but you were stick thin. You had pretty much no body fat. And since having this drug, your body shape has changed. You are still super muscly, but you've changed. You've transformed, right? You look healthy. I don't want to say you didn't look healthy before, but you look far more healthy now than you did perhaps previously before the drug, for less calories. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think that's, put it into context, like, so obviously where I'm pancreatic insufficient, I have to take creon too. And I still have to take the creon, but it's probably 75% less than I was taking.
Yeah.
And so I was eating, as you said, upwards of 3,500 calories a day just to maintain my weight. So, and although for a lot of people that sounds wonderful, it's actually not that fun when you're trying to do it, especially in a healthier way.
Yeah.
Whereas now, because of Kaftrio making my body near enough kind of mimic a normal body in a way, if I was to eat 3,500 calories a day, I would be a beast. I've put on about 10 kilos since then, just because my body can function.
Yes.
And so, like, for a lot of people who aren't educated or don't understand their own body, they've now had this complete opposite struggle that they've ever had, because suddenly they put on all this weight, they don't know how to deal with it, they suddenly have to eat less than they ever have been in their whole lives, and they can suddenly probably, you know, start training. And so, like, a lot of people, their mindset has had to completely transform.
Yes.
Which is hard, right? When you've been told one thing for your entire life, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, actually now you've got to eat a normal amount of calories and you need to do exercise or you're likely to be fat. Like, it's mental.
It's interesting, because I guess I know two people with cystic fibrosis. You're one of them and my cousin's the other, both who are super health conscious, very fit, have had sport in their lives from pretty much the beginning, and they, if you to look at them from the outside, you wouldn't assume that they had any sort of genetic condition that would affect their lungs, their fitness, their health. For the majority of people with cystic fibrosis that probably haven't grown up with sport, they've struggled to absorb their food. They, like you say, they're malnourished. Perhaps they frequently get chest infections. So they try and maybe start a fitness journey and then they're derailed with a lung infection or something. And now they have this drug. Their body's functioning normally. They're eating the same amount. So they're putting on weight, but now they don't know how to train and they're just getting fatter and fatter. So is it having the reverse effect? It's prolonging life and making people healthier, but then sending them off the other way, perhaps. Do you see a lot of that?
Yeah, and I've had, like, over the last couple of years since this medication's been out, like, people being like, well, what do I do? Because, again, doctors have to advise people on all of this. Maybe they don't have the correct information, and obviously, you know, people who maybe couldn't exercise before now can, but that's also quite a terrifying thought.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, I find it hard if I don't, say, for example, go for a run for a few days to get out the door sometimes, because it's like, oh, God, now I've got no energy, so I can't be bothered because I haven't moved, right? imagine not being able to move your entire life and then being told, well, you need to do some exercise, and then trying to start your fitness journey at like age 25, 30 because you can. So it's really difficult. And I've like had, which I think it's great, like a lot of CF clients online to try and help them just kickstart their journey and understand their body and like be able to get to a certain point in fitness, because you've got to think as well, like for them, like getting out of breath is terrifying.
Mm.
Like for me, like it's a different story because I've done a lot of training and I've trained my entire life. But for someone who's always been breathless with this new medication, has say gone from like a 30% lung function to a 90% lung function, can breathe, but doesn't quite understand the difference between like cardio fitness and then CF. And so, you know, when you're unfit and you can't run, like you're going to be out of breath, your heart rate's going to be all over the place. But it's very similar mimicking to when CF is a problem.
Yeah.
And so then it's like a very fine line to be, try and encourage people to build up from nothing and be okay with being out of breath.
Yeah. I guess it's almost like that the feeling of somebody that doesn't have CF is like you're permanently running at a tempo breathlessness.
Yeah.
Even when you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't have that ability to.
Yeah.
That top end. Yeah. You don't have access to it almost.
No. And I think one of the most vivid memories I have is before I went on this medication, I was walking down the seafront with a friend of mine and I wasn't particularly well, but I remember I couldn't walk and talk at the same time without being out of breath.
Wow.
Like I physically was like gasping for air. And I was like, that is terrifying, because it's like, I wasn't even particularly like, I was unwell for me, but that doesn't mean I was unwell in the basis of CF. And so like, if that was how, what it felt at, say for example, 80% lung function, like imagine what it must feel at like 30.
It's, yeah, unimaginable. It's almost, I remember the closest I think I could probably, it's not similar, but after I had COVID, I remember trying to go for a run. And I was just out of breath walking, and it just, everything, the paces were normal, but the effort level was 2-3 times higher. And it took me almost a month for that to come back down to normal levels. Even though my fitness was still there, I just didn't have the lung function and the capacity to go any higher. It was a bizarre, bizarre feeling. Yeah,
especially for someone who's extremely fit and you're like, what is going on? Like,
exactly.
Let me get back to normal.
So before, in 2021, we had you on, you were a runner. You're still a runner. How did your journey start as a runner? What brought you to running? I know you've done a lot of gym work. You've done a lot of strength stuff. You've done a lot of strength challenges. You've done hikes. You've done ultra Ironmans. You did your own Ultra Ironman that you created yourself.
I did.
Lots of summits and things. How have you landed on running now as almost a main focus?
Well, for me, I used to be a 400-meter sprinter when I was between the ages of 10 and 21.
This is so far away from 400-meter sprinting.
I know. So that's funny. I used to do, yeah.
The amount of people that do ultra running and say, well, I used to be a 400 or an 800 sprinter in school, and you go, no. I've cut you off. You were a sprinter in school.
Yeah, so I was a sprinter, and I was actually pretty good. Like, I remember so vividly because I'd get down to the track for practice and the full grown men were like, oh god, like, you're here. And then my coach was like, you're gonna have to race the men because the women aren't faster than us. And I beat the men. So like, I was pretty good at the time, but obviously like, you become an adult and then have to decide like whether you need to earn money or not. And that so I kind of hung up my spikes and was like, all right, then I'll go and be an adult for a bit. But you know, when I was 19, I was really unwell. And that was terrifying, because I think for me, like, I had a pretty okay ride through my teenage years, even to the point where I was like, yes, I was in hospital and I had bouts of, you know, sickness, but I was like, are we sure that, you know, I've got CF? Because compared to people I know, I'm okay, you know. And it was a bit confusing, but then I did become unwell and my lung function did drop to 50%, which again is very eye-opening when you're used to being able to breathe quite normally. And I then had to just make a decision, because I was like, do I lean into what the doctors think, which was, you know, you may only have a couple of years to live from age 19, or do I see what's possible? Because I have so many things I want to do. I don't actually have time to dive because I've got too many adventures and challenges and things that I want to do. So that's when I kind of started leaning into the longer distance running. I did some VO2 max testing with someone, and I worked with a friend of mine who is a coach for off-track endurance running.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of then discovered like what would work for my body, got my lung function back up to a great level. And kind of from there, I got offered, like, through social media, an ultra marathon 100K. Naively, I was like, yeah, sure, I'll come and do that in 2 weeks' time. Which I think I was. Completed it, but obviously it was very difficult and kind of
eye-opening.
And I remember, well, yeah, because I remember it so well, because I remember messaging Tom actually and being like, I've just said yes to this. He was like, you're going to be fine, but it's going to be a roller coaster of emotions. So just like be ready for that. And got through that, and I was like, well, cool. I know I've done that. Like, what else can I do? And I was then from there kind of offered like a 200 mile relay and like other things. And then kind of decided that I wanted to start making up my own events, because I am really fascinated with what people's capacities are. When you can push them mentally and physically, just to see what you can and can't do, or kind of just kind of helps you discover like who you are, what you want out of your own life. And I think I'm a firm believer of leaning into that discomfort. And I do think from that, like leaning into the hard does make life easier, because you can then develop such a strong mindset and such a strong strategy. And I think that's kind of why I love to kind of do these things that most people would probably deem as horrendous or crazy, or why on earth would you sign yourself up for something like that? And so over the years, I've kind of built on the fitness, and it's like, you know, now I'm going into another challenge, which I guess is what 10 years, 11 years of fitness worth in the making in a way, because I think it's like important to note, like, it does take time to build up. It doesn't, maybe not that long, but it does take time to build up, because I think with social media, it's so easy to compare, being like, oh, she's doing this, why can't I do that? But this is obviously years of like different things. But I think it's like one of those things. I love the challenge of like pushing yourself to the unknown to see whether you mentally and physically can do it.
It's interesting what you said there, that this has almost been like 10 years in the making. So I had interesting conversations with people before, and they say, well, I want to run a 100-mile race. And we go, well, what's your, give me the last 5 years of training. Like, well, it doesn't really matter. Like, we can train for this 6-month block or 1 year block. Like, but really, it's what you've done in the past that's going to influence where we're at now. So, you know, all the races that I do in the future, I'll have learned from all the races that I've done in the last 5, 10, 15 years. Like, I still reflect on the very first marathon I did with my flatmate from uni and mistakes I made, and try not to make them again. And it's just like, the more that you do, yes, you build up your aerobic endurance and you build up your resilience and your mental grit and your toolkit, but also you build up almost like race plans and scenarios, and you build up your list of things that have gone wrong to use to make things go right. That makes sense.
Oh, definitely. And I think, you know, even when I considered doing what I'm doing in a week and a half, the coach that I sat down with, and I said, I want you to tell me with the experience that I've had over the last 10 years, whether it's possible. Because I know that you've trained someone to do 76 marathons in 76 days, and through 2 or 3 people to run the length of Britain and all these things. If you say that I haven't done enough, then I'll put it off. Because, like, as you've just said, like, you know, you've got to understand that it's the build up over time. And he was like, yeah, you'll be fine. You could do it. You could train for it within 4 months and you'll be fine. I was like, that's quite terrifying.
I think it'd be no surprise. No surprise to listeners of the show that your coach is Chris Taylor, that we actually had on the show 3 weeks ago talking about his journey and how he plans challenges and people's mindset around challenges and supporting them through challenges. So I can understand him saying that. Your challenge then, let's get to that. What is it you're doing? What are you doing this time, I should say, in a week and a half?
God, don't. It doesn't even feel like I'm doing it. But I'm running 36 marathons in 36 days. raising money for the CF Trust, but also it's been confirmed that it could be a world record for the most consecutive marathons run with someone with cystic fibrosis.
Wow.
So
36. Why 36?
Oh, this question has been asked to me so many times. So basically, when I was younger, I got told that I wouldn't achieve anything, I wouldn't make it, I wouldn't be alive, all these kind of details. And then obviously when I got to 16, they were like, oh, well done, you survived the prediction. But maybe like you won't make 30. So when I turned 30, I was like, I want to run 30 marathons in 30 days. But it was COVID at the time and I came up with the idea way too late. So obviously I was like, oh, we'll put it off, I'll do it one day. Didn't think anything of it. Then I got into the London Marathon this year, but I'd already entered the Edinburgh Marathon as well. And I was like, hang on a minute. I wonder how many days in between these. Anyway, me being me, completely miscounted. And I was like, 35, that will do. What's five more marathons in the grand scheme of things? And then when I started, obviously, with Chris, he was like, I don't want to burst your bubble, but you're doing 36 marathons, so you miscounted the days. We're still doing it, but just to let you know, like, your final one is going to have to be your victory lap now in your head. And so, like, the number is completely coincidental of the fact that I did, I've got these two races either end, which I think is a really nice thing.
Yeah.
But obviously, I'm not 36, I'm only 32. But it was for me the significance with the CF side of it, me wanting to, like, kind of show what could be possible. With cystic fibrosis, but also like to try and inspire people just to get out of their comfort zones and do something that they'd be proud of.
Amazing. Well, hi. So talk us a little bit through the training journey. How you planned it? I guess you've been planning it since 2020. So it's been in the back of your mind, I guess, on every run that you've gone on, you've probably thought, one day I'm going to be doing the marathons. So you come to hard sessions, maybe where you want to stop, you want to quit. And I guess, is there something in the back of your mind that's saying, if I go home now, future me is going to regret it when I'm trying to run the marathons?
Well, exactly. And I think, you know, we all have those days when you don't want to go. You don't want to get up early. You don't want to do all that stuff. But I think it might have been, I don't remember who said it, but, you know, I'm a firm believer that if you make excuses, you will regret them. And I think mm-hmm. if you don't leave things you really want, you'll look back and be like, well, the time's gone by, I could have actually achieved that thing. And so, like, for me, you know, I was like, you know what, one day I want to do this, I have to keep my fitness up enough for when the opportunity arises. And obviously, like, I haven't done it yet, so, you know, who knows, but I'm determined to finish it, even if I have to walk some of, well, I will have to walk some of it, but, like, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I'm lucky enough to be able to do it with CF, to have that opportunity. And I'm a firm believer of living while you can. And I think, you know, your prime years are your, you know, your 30s, your 40s, while you can.
Yeah.
Maybe your 50s, 60s, if you keep yourself fit. But it's like, for me, it's like I'm determined to do everything that I can do because I'm lucky enough to still be alive and fit and able. And there's no reason for me not to. It would be me getting in my own way if I didn't commit to the sessions, and especially with obviously this training block where it has been intensive, I've kind of switched off the emotion towards the sessions because some of them obviously have been long, especially simulation week, just to be like, I just need to get these kilometers in. And so, like, you know, for me, it's like tick off each kilometer. Basically, in my head, it's like Taylor said, if I do what he says, I'll complete the challenge. So long as I've done every single kilometer,
no pressure. Training plan,
then technically I'll be okay. But it's like one of those things, isn't it? Like, I know that if I didn't put in the work, do everything that needed to be done, and for whatever reason didn't complete it, I know that would be on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want that. If I don't complete it, despite doing everything that I'm supposed to do, that's okay. I mean, it's not okay, but it's more okay than me not completing it because I didn't put in the work.
I think if I think back to when people run marathons, or when you have a really long run, some days you have a run and everything just gels and it's fantastic and the K's just fly by. Like, you have such a positive mindset. But then you might go out for a 5K or a 6K run maybe one day and you're so negative and it's it feels like time is standing still and you're running through mud and it's horrendous. And then you run a marathon and you almost get all of those emotions condensed into one entire run. And you're going to get that then over 36 different marathons. It's going to be wild. It's going to be so good.
I know. I think there's going to be some tears. I'm not going to lie.
What's your... Talk us through a typical marathon day then. What's it going to look like? Where are you going to be? Is it a looped course? Are you doing like backyard ultra style? Is it different? Well, I know the two, the start and the end are London and Edinburgh. So what's the setup?
Mm-hmm. So the first thought that I really wanted to do was to run to Edinburgh. But logistically, financially, that was quite difficult to put together because I can't ask anyone to give up 36 days of work.
Mm.
That's not fair. So what I've had to do is I've created loops around my local area because I've actually had a few people that want to join, but like obviously maybe not for full marathons. So I've set up loops so that people could do 5K, 10K, 20K, whatever they want to do. Because it'd be lovely to have people to join, obviously, to keep up the morale. So basically each day is a slightly different route, and I'm going to be running in London a little bit as well, just nice. To change things up. And then I think I've got one run in Bournemouth, just because my management's down there, so they said they'd come and join, and there's a different scenery. But to be honest, I've kind of like where I've done the training runs, it's kind of really opened up my eyes to how I want it to be, because I set up all of the routes and I was like, I've done it, I've created the routes, and now I've been doing the long runs around my area. I'm like, actually, I know now what I want from it, because I want the shorter laps that people can join. There's like obviously like cafes and shops and toilets and stuff along those kind of routes. There's some of them that are a bit off-road, some of the routes, but I think logistically I have to try and make it as simple as possible, because I'm going to get to a point where mentally I just need to not really think about where I'm running, because I already know like where I'm going. And because I'm not obviously doing a point to point or whatever anymore, it just makes more sense for me to kind of like do that. The only problem is going to be is if I have weather like I did on simulation week, I'm going to have to change some of the routes because the wind was 35 miles an hour on the seafront, which is not fun for anybody. But I'm excited to kind of get my teeth stuck into it. I think I'm going to have a bit of a lull on day two because it would have been after London.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to get up on the Monday and be like, cool, marathon in Southend, here we go. But I'm excited to kind of see how I fare up, and I think like, see how my mindset kind of tests me to leaning into that. Like even with Paris, which I did at the weekend, I loved Paris actually, but it was one of those things where I had in the back of my mind Taylor going, don't push, you've got to just do an easy marathon, because at the end of the day, if I've got to do 36 in a row, I have to practice the pacing, because you know what it's like when you feel good, you get carried away. If I do that and then I wake up the next day and I'm kind of like done myself over, then there's going to be obviously a problem. So like simulation week is about practicing the food, the recovery, the pace, to ensure that I can get up every single day and just go and crack out an easy marathon, if there is such a thing.
So is the plan to wake up early morning, crack out a marathon, sort of four and a half hours, 5 hours, something like that, fairly relaxed, and then come in, recover? I guess you'll still be working, so work, sleep, repeat.
Yep. Yeah, basically. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to get up, I'm going to start fueling and hydrating, do a bit of work, leave at midday, because then it gives me the morning to kind of get myself ready, which I think is the most sensible option, because I'd rather get out, do a bit of work so it's not on my mind. And then if it does, for example, take me a bit longer or like whatever, then I don't have the pressure on my shoulders to be like, oh God, I've got to get back and I need to do this and that and the other. But I think the goal is to be 4.5 hours every day, nothing too crazy, just so that I can kind of keep going.
Okay. And fueling, what sort of increase are you predicting to your fueling load per day?
I think I'm going to aim for an extra 1,000 calories a day to begin with, which actually is quite difficult because I'm trying to do it with good food.
Yeah.
Because obviously, like, I don't want anything to affect my gut, which is my most terrifying thought process. Like, one of my biggest fears of running marathons is needing the toilet and I can't go.
Yeah. And it's made worse by the fact you have cystic fibrosis, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And it's like one of those things where I'm like, right, well, how am I going to ensure that this isn't a thing? Like the medication I take, the food I eat, everything will have to be on repeat, even though that's going to be really mundane.
Yeah.
What works.
What's your go-to marathon fuel?
So for Paris, I had oats with a banana, a coffee, electrolytes, and that was enough. And then obviously during the marathon, I had some gels. I think I had them every 50 minutes.
Okay. It's a fairly straightforward.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it as simple as possible because it's like the moment you start complicating things. But I do know that if needed, I can eat and run. Like I'm one of those people that if needed, I can have a banana or like a flat jerk or something and I can then just go and run without a problem. So
yeah,
I'm not too concerned about like having to do that because some days I'm going to have to. So I'm just going to be tired and not.
One of the weirdest things I heard someone say once was that they, in their camel pack, it was an ultra runner, in his camel pack, he used to mix oats with this water and he'd say he'd leave them and they would sink to the bottom and they would mix with the water and then when he sucked it through the bladder he would get like a mixture of oats and water, so it's like an oat milk / slushy but a carbohydrate water. I thought about it for ages if it was a good idea or not. I've never tried it.
I'm not sure I'm gonna this time around.
Maybe not.
I think, do you know what? You know what would happen to me? I would probably do that, choke on a note, and then I'd die. Like that would be it. That's how I would go. But after all this effort, that's how she dies.
Marathon 35, she dies on an oat husk.
Yeah, because you imagine you'd be like, well, she tried. Didn't quite make it though, did she?
Be an interesting obituary. So physically, you're ready. How have you trained mentally? Because quite often we know like the physical side of things, it's not the physical side that often gives up with these challenges and these run people that plan these big runs. More often than not, it's the mental side. So their brain tells them they've had enough, they want to stop, they sit down, they rest, they're done, they never get up again out the chair. But really, physically they're absolutely fine. So how have you prepared, or what have you done that's been mentally challenging to prepare you for this event?
There's been a few things, and that for me, I actually feel probably the most mentally resilient I've ever been, which is great, obviously, running into this challenge. But for me, I've completely committed myself to each kilometre of every week, even when I've broken my wrist after snowboarding, which was fantastic timing. I was like, do you know what? If I want this, I have to commit to every single kilometre that I am given.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I don't want it enough. Like, the challenge itself is going to be so hard. If I can't even do the training runs that are shorter, like, what am I thinking? Like, that is just, I've also tried to take the emotion out of it because I think a lot of the time our minds play on our emotions and, you know, tell us, as you said, like, you're tired. And I've taken the emotional side out to be like, do you know what? Of course, yeah, I'm going to be tired. Yeah, of course, I'm going to have these things, but I've just got to go and get these runs done. It's just a run. Like, go out, get the run done, come back, another tick in the box. And I guess that's what I'm going to try and play on. Like, obviously enjoy it, not just completely emotionless. But in terms of, like, my emotion around how I feel about going to do a long run, it's like, I've just got to go and do it. That is it. You've got to commit to the cause. You've created this challenge. You do want it. It's going to be hard. That is the entire point of it. It's going to be hard. It's going to challenge you. It's going to test you. But you can't let your mindset beat you on that, because as you've said, like, your body generally is okay. Like, your body's never going to give up. It's your mind that tells your body to give up, and therefore you do it. Just, it's a test for your mind, this kind of thing, because obviously, like, so long as I get the kilometers done every single day, I've still completed the marathon. Doesn't have to be done at like a speed. But I've also decided I probably wouldn't ever want to do this again. So I have no choice but to complete it, because if I don't complete it, I'll have to do it again next year. So that's it. I've got to go and get these 36 marathons done, because one, I want the world record. Two, it's something I've wanted for such a long time. And if I don't complete it because my mindset gave up, that's on me.
Yeah.
It's not okay. because I will hold that regret probably for the rest of my life.
You'll know the next day when you get up that when you're physically walking around, if you can walk around, then you'd just be destroyed, soul destroyed.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like I'm committing to myself, to the challenge. It's going to be a long 5 weeks, but it is also only 5 weeks in the grand scheme of the entire year.
Yeah.
So, and I'm going to have people around me. It doesn't matter how the execution is done, so long as I can plate the distance every single day. So it's kind of just commit to yourself, commit to the goal, get it done. And actually, I feel really, really, really good. And I'm probably the fittest I've ever been in my entire life.
What percentage of the training would you say is training that you don't want to do? Like, you know, the type of runs where you go, do you know what, I just can't be bothered, but you've gone and done it. What would you say your split is throughout the week?
Probably 50-50.
Really?
Because I think for me, that like, I love like an interval or like a tempo session. But okay. A lot of these training runs aren't that.
Yes.
Because they can't be. So I've got to run out the door and I know I've got like these tempo sessions, although most people hate them. And I'm like, I've got another 20 miles to run today, just at an easy pace.
Yeah.
Which is like most people are like, oh, easy pace. And I'm like, yeah, but at least with the intervals and stuff, it breaks up runs. You get to challenge yourself, test yourself a bit. And I love the feeling of that, obviously, maybe because of the old sprinting days.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, when I did simulation week last week, I was like, cool, nearly 20 miles every day at an easy pace at 5 in the morning. I can't wait. It's windy. It's raining. It's going to be horrible. But, you know,
what was your biggest week? So simulation week was last week and you finished with Paris Marathon. What was your total Ks or miles for the week?
It's 180K. So
180K.
Yeah. Nice. So I actually felt fine though. I almost like, it sounds really awful, doesn't it? But I almost like cheated at Paris. So I kind of, I think I did my last 3K were my fastest, like sub 5 minute Ks. Got to the finish line and even I had someone messaging me being like, you were sprinting down that finish line. I was like, yeah, because I felt so good, even though that was not the game plan, but whatever, we made it. And I literally saw these people like hobbling around. I was like, I feel a bit disappointed because I'm okay. And then woke up the next day, obviously on the Monday, being like, oh, I could definitely go for a run. But obviously that's the whole point, isn't it? Like, you know, it works. So.
I know lots of people. So Marcus, who founded Inner Fight, he did 30 marathons in 30 days during Dubai Fitness Challenge. And I know he's obviously of good health. And so for him, it was about the running and it was about the recovery. For you, you have cystic fibrosis. Is there any additional considerations you need to take into effect or you've had to consider in the training or that you have to consider with running back-to-back marathons like that?
I think for me, it's just ensuring that I'm having my medication at the right time.
Okay.
Because with the medication, with Cathrio, you have to take it every 12 hours.
Okay.
Near enough on the same kind of like point.
It does
for me, like if I don't, it does affect my digestive system quite significantly. And not in a good way.
Okay.
So like, I have to ensure that I do that. I'm actually then going to increase the amount of digestive enzymes I take. Not because I take too little now, but because my volume of food is going to be going up quite significantly. My body needs to be ready for that. Again, because I don't want to have to deal with the latter situation. And then I guess ensuring that I am listening to my body, ensuring that I'm trying to get enough sleep and rest. Because you know, for me, like, I get restless legs when I do endurance, so that like, I don't sleep very well. So I'm going to have to try and, like, find a way to ensure that I am resting and sleeping and having the support around me with, like, sports massage. And I've got those boots that I wear every day.
Like compression boots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe ice baths if I'm brave. Need it.
You've got the sea on your doorstep.
I know, but it's not always in. This is the problem. Sometimes it's not there. So that's a job a mile out to go and get it.
Log it. Just kind of start at the end of the marathon. Finish at the sea.
So, yeah, like, I think for me, like, I think I have full confidence my lungs will be okay. I think it's more,
yeah.
I need to ensure, I'm going to be tired, but I need to ensure that I'm looking after all the elements so that it doesn't impact me in terms of picking up a chest infection because it is going to be hitting my immune system.
Is there any way that you track or monitor then your your resting heart rate or your heart rate variability? Do you monitor those, or do you get blood work done often to track anything or any predictive sickness coming up? Is there a way to do that?
I have regular blood tests and stuff with my clinics, but I think for this one it's just going to be heart rate monitors and see how that goes. I did notice that by the end of the Paris Marathon, my heart rate, although it was only 150, I think, was higher than it would have been at that pace as normal. But I think that's quite normal when you're doing so many hours back to back, so many miles, it does go up. But it was just interesting to see where my normal heart rate at that particular pace would have been, 140. So it's 10 beats different, but it's significant in terms of the hours.
I guess, endorphins from running in a big city marathon, and maybe some dehydration as well. It was it was warm towards the end of Paris Marathon, wasn't it? Mid 20s.
Yeah. And actually, obviously living in the UK, I think I've been training in 12 degrees. So that's
dehydration
great.
Element as well.
Yeah.
Lovely. What are you scared of?
I'm scared of letting myself down. That's probably one of my biggest fears. Because I think for me, I know that I am able and I have the capacity and the capability. But I think for me, if I let myself down because of an excuse or just simply because I've had a moment where my mindset has won, I know that I think I would carry that with me. Even if I then completed the same challenge, I know that although it would be learning from the first one, I know that I probably could have just pushed myself through to do it, because, I still sit here and sometimes think I am so lucky. I'm 32 years old. I technically shouldn't be alive, but here I am going to go and attempt 36 marathons in a row. When I started and finished Paris Marathon, I actually felt quite emotional because I'd got to this point where I knew I was going to complete Paris. But I had no doubt, because I felt fit, I felt good, I'd run all these kilometres in the week. But I thought, the younger me never would have actually, even though she never gave up, would have believed that I would be sitting in this position now, after losing so many people with CF and knowing other people that have kind of battled certain things. So I think, going forward, I just don't want to let myself down while I am able and fit and well.
Do you feel like you appreciate, as time goes on, you appreciate these challenges more, or does your perception of them change? Because like you say, you weren't meant to be here at this time. And so every year you go on now, you're almost cheating the system, and you're giving a big F you to the people that said you won't be here at 16. So
definitely. And I think, my mindset towards challenges has changed, because previous to this, it was my way of, maybe wrongly so, naively uneducated, but my way of, it's the only way I'm going to stay alive is by me doing these. So for me, they were my lifeline. They were, if you don't do them, you might die. And that's simply because I did one challenge and I survived and I got well. And therefore I related them to survival. Whereas now I see them as being able to thrive in it, but I can thrive without it, but I enjoy doing them because I can. And I'm fascinated as to what can be achieved, especially with the new medication that is available. And it's a medication that I probably never thought I'd ever see in my lifetime. And so it's a privilege to be able to breathe, because I remember the first one I ever did after taking this medication. And I was this is why people love running so much, because breathing is easy for people that can breathe. I didn't realise I couldn't breathe. And so, for me to be able to actually take a deep breath and it feel good rather than restricted, the only way I can liken it is if you were to run down the road in a Porsche, for example. And I think for me, it's just a privilege to be able to have the opportunity to have an experience and a challenge and make memories, and do something that maybe other people wouldn't do. Like, I love to kind of push myself, which is why I love to maybe make up challenges myself while doing races, because I think, you know, if I can, I will, and why not? So my mindset with the challenges have changed simply because I'm well and I'm not fighting for my life anymore. This is my life now. This is normal. This is sustainable. Like, I don't have to do loads of fitness to be well. I could probably, although I wouldn't want to, train or not train and I'd still be well.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't be able to eat as much though, that's the
main. No, that's the sad thing. So that's the only reason I do this, right? So I can still eat the 3,500 calories a day.
Exactly. Where does it go? So you finish this you finish the 36 marathons. Are you scared of what's next because you want to keep pushing your limits and get bigger and bigger and better and see, like you said, how far you can go and how far you can push the limits of cystic fibrosis and what the medication can do and let you do? Are you scared of what you might come up with? Is it always going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and more and more and more?
I think people around me are scared, for sure. I've already had people ask me, so what's next? And I'm like, hang on a minute, I've not completed this one.
Relax, yeah.
Hang on a minute. I think for me, like, it might be a different kind of challenge, maybe a UTMB.
Mm.
Doesn't necessarily have to be marathons. It doesn't necessarily even have to be running, I think. You know, I like to kind of dip my toe in different things. That's why I did the Ultra Ironman. And I actually did the Ultra Ironman off the back of not feeling well, because I was like, I need something to push me here because I'm struggling. And so my friend then was like, let's do it, did it. But I think, like, you know, I think there's going to be definitely a bit of a lull once I've done it. There'll be the high, and then I would have dedicated nearly a year of my life to this goal, and then it will be done, and then I'll be like, who am I? What do I do? What's going on? although I do already have 2 marathons at the end of the year, so it's not going to be like...
Yeah.
No. But I think, like, you know, in terms of next, I'm just going to see how I feel. I think it probably will involve running, but, you know, there's so many things you can do. And I've never done a mountain run, so... Nice.
Watch this space. Maybe one of those marathons you can head into the Peak District or something.
Yeah, maybe. To be fair, there's a nice little as well.
There's a nice little easy 35k loop, and you can just add on an extra 7.
Oh, you can just send me the route then, off I go.
Perfect. Amazing. Sophie, thank you very much for your time. It's great to have you back on. How can people follow along, follow the journey? What's the best place to look you up, get some information?
So probably my Instagram, Sophie Grace Holmes. But there I will be putting up an open tracking link to follow the marathons as well as the routes, in case anyone wants to come and join.
Yeah. Excellent. Brilliant. So. We will follow the 36 days day by day. And no doubt it would be good to have you on, actually, when you're finished, and you can tell us the best bits and the worst bits.
Oh, definitely. I'm actually, I've been tasked to do, obviously I've got to do the filming for the world record, but the main task to film the harder moments, the emotion. Because I think you can write it down at the end of the day, but I don't think it quite captures the moment where I'm like, that's it, I've had enough, I'm not running anymore. And then there's someone in the background being like, just go and suck it up, like, go and get it over with. And so, yeah, I'd love to come back. Like, obviously it's always great to catch you, and hopefully we'll run together at some point this year.
Be good. We'll sort it out when I'm in the UK in the summer.
Yeah, try and keep up with your pace this time. And
gladly run slowly.
But no, it's been an absolute pleasure. And amazing. Yeah, thank you for having me on again.
Sophie, thank you very much for your time. I'll talk soon.
Thank you.